From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? Joining me this week for our regular Goal Own Goal segment and plenty of fodder for this particular discussion, my dear friend, Roger Mitchell. Roger, come in, mate. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. How are you, Grant? How are you?
I always get nervous when I hear very, very good in a Scottish accent. That normally happens in pubs, Roger. It's the stark warnings of danger to come.
Well, no, it's funny, actually, because, you know, I don't know whether you find this getting older, but I've got more mood swings than I used to have, Grant. Up and down.
How is that possible?
It just is. I don't know what it is. Sometimes I'm just not there, and other times like you're bouncing off the walls. I don't know.
Which is it today? Just so I know.
I think it's the former a little bit. So I'm hoping you're going to get me a little bit to the latter by the end of the show.
Well, let's see what we can do, shall we? Let's see what we can do for everybody's sake.
No, but before we start, it's been a long time since we only get to do these once a month. Can I ask you a little bit for a reason that I empathised with it so much? The story that you told in your newsletter about the heavy seas, I'd like you to tell me a little bit about how bad that really was, because that is one of my nightmare scenarios, is being on a sailing boat in the middle of the sea and it's just rocking and rolling. Was that your first experience of that?
It was my first experience on a sailboat. I tell a lie. I joined the same gentleman last year on the sailboat, but we went to Mallorca. I was only there, I think, 3 or maybe 4 days, and there was zero wind. Like, we couldn't even put the sails up. The Med was so calm that we had to use the motor. So I'd been on a sailboat, but I'd never sailed. So this was my first effort, actually under sail power. And the beauty of it, Rog, I didn't have a clue what I was doing, right? I had no idea what was good, what was bad, what was safe, what was dangerous. I mean, obviously you get that feeling in your stomach, but I just took my cue from the captain, and I figured if he looks worried, I should be really worried. But whether he was faking it or not, I don't know. But there were like, you know, 5 meter waves and 45 knot winds, and it was it was quite something. And we did that for 6 hours before we got some shelter. And
6 hours
in that. Yeah, it was pretty rough. I have to say.
I loved in the newsletter when you were describing this, when you said when you get into port and, you know, your shoulders relaxed and your forearms released. You know, I just empathize so much with that tension. You know, my wife really loves to do these kind of like things, and every time we go on a holiday, I know this penance is coming, you know, and like, it's always the same, just like you described it there, that, you know, when you're still in the bay, it looks nice and calm, and you usually start early in the morning when the wind's not up.
Yeah.
And then 1 hour in, you're in all kinds of pain. I so empathized with this. We had one really bad one that we were in Zanzibar. And one of the trips that she wanted to go on was to one of these islands that only appears when the tide's down. You know, it's in the middle of the ocean, but in the middle of the day it kind of appears and then disappears at night. And there was this small boat, sailing boat. There's maybe about 8 people on it. And we were to go to this island, and it was being run by one of these English posh lads that was on a gap year. You know. Do you know what I mean? You know, like it's the same thing in the morning. Isn't it beautiful? Look at the sun coming up, you know, flat as a pancake. And coming back, a completely, completely different story. And I see this guy, he's kind of like different to your captain. He was starting to show signs of discomfort. So I said to Rafael, I said, look, Hurry Henry here, I think he's in trouble. I'm going to go and speak to him.
Oh, yeah, because that's what he needs at that particular point in his life.
Yeah. So I went up to him, I said, listen, mate, it's just between you and me, but I need this to, like, psychologically manage this moment. Have you ever done this before? He says, yeah, I've been sailing a lot, but I've never had the wind in this direction at this time of day. I just thought, oh great. No. And as you say, the shoulders just tense up and, like, yeah. And there's nothing you can do. It is one of life's great penances. Absolutely.
Well, you know what? It's as interesting as that experience was, Rog, I was way more tense when I had to ride a horse once. I found that way more stressful.
Oh, really?
I got off the horse. Oh, I hated it. I got off the horse. This is, Christ, 35 years ago, I guess. I got off the horse and the reins, when I finally relaxed my grip on the reins, the blood was pouring from my fingers and basically eating into my fingers. I was gripping them so hard. So I've not been back on a horse for 35 years, but I will happily go back on a sailboat next year.
Fantastic. Listen, before we get into the meat of this, I do want to recognise the fact that you have now become the geopolitical leader of the sports industry after being heavily mentioned in the Leaders in Sport newsletter. So I think given that, you should probably give us a couple of minutes on the commentary on the events of the weekend and the election.
Roger, what do you think I am? What do you think I am? This is like taking me into a Liverpool pub and telling me to wax lyrical about Dixie Dean. I mean, come on. it's just not going to happen, my friend. I mean, the election is, I was going to say it's over, but it's not, I don't think, by a long way yet, but we'll see. Maybe we just get something happen and it goes away. But no, I'm not stirring those waters up. This is, we're talking about sport here, Rog. No one wants to talk politics.
I was going to dovetail it with this article that I think it was in The Guardian about Trump lost because he took on the sports athletes. But I agree, we'll leave it, Grant. I honestly, I'm sure everybody's electioned out. So let's move on to the funniest episode of the weekend.
Go on then. Well, you can go first.
The funniest episode of the weekend is not anything to do with my goals or on goals.
All right.
So I'm just envisaging the scene, right? You know, you guys are outside the relegation zone just now. You're doing okay. And like, you get a penalty to equalise. That's right. Yeah, against West Ham.
In the 98th minute.
Right. So you must have been like stomping around the living room.
I punched the air when we got the penalty. I punched the air.
So describe to us your view of the person walking up to take the penalty, what was going
All right. For those of you listening to this who have no idea what we're talking about, we should probably clear you in. This is West Ham against Fulham on Saturday evening. A 0-0 draw. Both teams could have won. It was a pretty even game. West Ham score a goal. I think it was the 87th minute West Ham get their goal. It was very close to full time. And the commentator said, West Ham have won it as the goal went in. Fulham then get a penalty in the 97th minute, 98th minute. And look, it probably was a penalty. If it had gone against me, I'd have been pissed. It went for me, I was happy. But yeah, if it hadn't been given, I could have seen that. But we got it thanks to VAR. And I want to talk about that later on, Rich, actually. But now up steps a guy called Lookman, who is a good player. I mean, he's been very good for Fulham this year. He's got lots of tricks. He's got something to prove. You know, he should have gone to one of the big clubs, but his medical failed, and so he ended up at Fulham at the last minute. And he's looked very good for us this year. He's got a lot of confidence, perhaps too much confidence, as we'll find out in a second. You just think this is no doubt the last kick of the match. Bury the penalty. Let's squeak a point. Get out of here. What then follows, I believe, in some circles, Rog, is called a Panenka. It's one of those penalties where you come screaming into the ball and instead of belting it, you just dink it down the middle, you chip it so it goes in, head high or above in the middle of the goal, assuming the goalkeeper is going to dive left or right. What our guy did instead of doing that was he dinked it with not enough force to make it to the goal, and he also dinked it basically to the goalkeeper's right. So you if the goalkeeper dives either way and it's down the middle, you increase your chances of scoring. If it's head high, because he's diving, he can't reach it. So it's a sensible tactic, right? But this was none of the above. This was a fluff chip on a golf course that doesn't make it through the fringe is what it was. I mean, the look on a goalkeeper's face was priceless. I mean, he kind of stooped to his right and had time to almost stand up again and catch it. He bounced it once. I mean, you just look for it on YouTube. It was appalling. I mean,
and your reaction watching that?
Yeah, let's just say words came out of my mouth, Ross, that are not fit, for a primetime podcast. But look, I will say this: in the moment, I was absolutely fuming. After the moment, I'm still fuming. But you know, look, if it had come off, the guy's a legend. It didn't. He looks a complete prat, and he's going to have to deal with that. He's going to have to live with it. The fans are going to be mad at it, and the players are going to be mad at it, and the manager's going to be mad at it. I totally get it. But the poor guy, I mean, you could see he was absolutely, there was no cockiness in his demeanor after this. There was no, he was absolutely beside himself. You could see it in his face. He was inconsolable. So, you know, look, at this point, Scott Parker handled it very well in his interview, I thought. He said, look, everyone's can miss a penalty. Yeah. He said that everyone can miss a penalty. You just can't miss a penalty like that. And I think that is the thing. You know, it's the 98th minute. You put your boot through the ball and you try and put the goalkeeper in the back of the net with it is what you do, right? Under those circumstances. If you're 4-0 up.
I saw that whole narrative there, but that's not really the reality, is it? Because I may be wrong, but Panenka did that in the final of a European Championship. Andrea Pirlo did it against England in the quarterfinals of the Euros. And Totti famously did it in the semi-finals of the Euros against Holland. It's only worth doing it if it's like dramatically binary.
I disagree. You're talking about Totti, you're talking about Pirlo. I mean, these are two of the greatest players who've ever pulled on an Italy shirt, maybe a football shirt, Rog. And there's a level of talent and there's a level of, you know, almost transcendency you get to at that level that you can do this kind of thing at that level. And there are very few players who can do it, something which was proven on Saturday night at around 8 p.m. local time, just in case you want to timestamp it. So, yes, that was, that was going to be one of my own goals this week, so we can get that one out of the way. Just shocking. But, look, when the dust settles, the other results went away. I do feel sorry for the lad. I think it's going to be a tough one for him.
I mean, he tried.
He's a young lad, right? He's a young lad. He's a very young lad, and he's a good player. So hopefully, the fact that it didn't change the standings on the table, all right, it could have squeaked us a point. Now, if it cost us 3 points, something different. But anyway, it is what it is. Poor guy. I do feel sorry for him, I have to say. I hope he bounces back because we're going to need him.
Good. Let's get into the meat of the show then with your first goal, Grant.
My first goal. It's Masters Week, Rog.
Yes, it is.
It's not often you get to say that in November. In fact, this is the first time you've been able to say it in November. So Masters Week is always a massive goal, and I'm always happy to see it. It's going to be an interesting scenario to see it with no patrons, with no azalea, with no dogwood. You know, the fairways, I presume, are going to be much firmer. I mean, I'm sure they will try and get the course in the kind of shape that it's normally in March, in April, sorry, which will mean, you know, watering it and stuff, but we'll see. However, my goal this week, this is a goal slash own goal. I'm not really sure what it is, Roger, to be honest with you. But it's a round of golf supposedly played by Bryson DeChambeau in practice. Now, we've had this discussion about DeChambeau and what he's doing to the game of golf and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. And, it's hard to tell at this point. I think the jury is still out, frankly. But the reports of DeChambeau's practice round, which came through golf.com, certainly there's no reason to believe they're not accurate. The headline in the article was Bryson DeChambeau plays a jaw-dropping round at Augusta before the Masters. Now, he played this round with Sandy Lyle, one of your countrymen / one of my countrymen, right?
Ex-winner, let's not forget.
Ex-winner in 1988 when I sat up late in the night just
7 iron out of the bunker in the 18th.
Yep. Who did he beat? Do you remember?
Greg Norman?
No, it would have been a good call at the time. Mark Calcavecchia, he beat by at the time. It was a really close, I mean, he needed that putt basically to beat Calcavecchia. So it was a fantastic finish. Anyway, so I'm going to run you through some of this article, right? And if you want to find it, so just Google Bryson DeChambeau plays a jaw-dropping round at Augusta before the Masters. He hit a wedge into the 445-yard first hole.
Right.
His second into the 575-yard par 5 was an 8-iron. Now, admittedly, that hole is steeply downhill, but still, it's 600 yards. He's hit an 8-iron for his second shot. The 350-yard third hole is a par 4. He hit a 3-wood over the green, a 3-wood. And it just gets worse. I mean, it's the eighth hole is an uphill par 5. He hit his second iron. His second shot was a 7-iron. Most people are hitting 3-irons, 4-irons, maybe hybrids in there. He hit sand wedge into the 460-yard ninth. He hit a pitching wedge into the 10th hole.
A wedge into the 10.
A pitching wedge into 10. He hit 9-iron into 11. The 13th, that iconic par 5 around the corner, he hit 3-wood 7-iron.
That's ridiculous.
On the 15th hole. The 15th hole, you know, the one with the pond in front where they're playing down the hill, stick that hanging
there. The Seve into the river,
The Seve hole. And last year, where Molinari clipped the tree and lost the title to Tiger. 530 yards, he hit 9-iron into the green.
That's ridiculous. It's a different sport.
It's a different sport. Look, we don't know how much it's a different course. Maybe the balls are running and a lot of other pros are going to have completely different shots in. So we don't know, right? We know it's been warm. That part of the country is always warm through the summer, so maybe the course has dried out and it's sweet. But I mean, if he does this in the tournament, the only defense the course has is the greens, and they are a considerable defense. They're not easy to putt. They really aren't easy to putt, and so it's not a guarantee. But if you're hitting wedge into these greens and sand wedges and 9-irons, and the others are hitting 5-irons, 6-irons, and greater, you have got a massive advantage. So, if this is true, obviously there's no pressure in this. There's no pressure. It's a practice round, which also helps. But, with no crowd and no roars and no nothing going on, it's going to be very interesting. So, it's a goal because we might get a chance to see something just we've never seen before. But it's an own goal in the case of if it makes courses like Augusta obsolete. They're going to have to do something to dial the ball back. But again, if they dial the ball back, he's that far ahead of everybody else. So you make him have to hit 4-iron. The other guys are going to have to get 3-wood in there. It's very tricky. It's very tricky. But I'm looking forward to everything about the Masters this year. A, I missed it in April. B, it's just the most wonderful tournament. And it's here, Rod. So yeah, that's a goal/own goal. I'm not sure which file to put one in.
The Masters Augusta put out a couple of videos this morning showing the course in the fall colours. I don't know if you've seen it. They're beautiful little videos.
I haven't seen them yet.
You have to have a wee look. They're just beautiful. It looks great. I was, like you, really looking forward to this, but now you've kind of knocked me down a little bit. There's no way you should be hitting a wedge into 10. I mean, 10 is one of the definitive holes. It's tough. And there's no that's not the same. That's depressing.
Well, let's wait and see, right? I mean, but I am worried that he is going to just demolish the golf course, which would be a shame. More problematic, I guess, down the track is it's going to change the way the next generation of golfers view the game, and it is going to change golf. If they're going to have to come up with some way to do this, the US Open, he basically changed the US Open forever because he's hitting wedges out of the rough just because he bombs it so far. It doesn't matter if he's in the rough because he's only hitting a wedge, and it does change things. So we'll see, Roger. Well, it's going to be interesting.
And of course, he will be sponsored by DraftKings. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes, I did. Yeah, no great surprise there. But the thing I've been wrestling with, I just. If he was a more likable character, I think I'd have less of a problem with it. But he just you know, in what I've seen of him, he just seems to be obnoxious enough that he's not the kind of guy you want to be ruling golf. You know, you don't want a guy like that to be head and shoulders above the rest of the competition, just because I'm not, it doesn't seem to have a lot of charisma. It doesn't have a lot of personality. Yeah, you know,
Grant,
what I mean?
Grant, if we went back 60 years, they were saying the same about Nicholas. When he burst on, he had the distance advantage. Arnie was going to be overwhelmed. Everybody loved Arnie. History.
Yeah, it's a great point. It's a great point, Rog. It is a great point. We'll see.
No, but I don't have an issue with him personally. I just don't like the fact that you take out the characteristics of a course that we all know backwards. We all know what it means to be like at the 15th and, you know, are you going to go for it? You're going to lay up. It completely changes it. Completely changes the view and experience.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Exactly right. Well, we shall see. But regardless, I'll be sat in front of the TV for an ungodly amount of hours this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my goal, I've put it as a goal, I'm really keen to hear your view about this, was the Chris Sutton little video interview around heading and dementia. I don't know whether you saw that.
I haven't seen it. No, I haven't seen it.
Well, you know that his father has been a sufferer and has been, he's been campaigning for a long time and been particularly critical of the PFA, which I think he's right on. When you think of some of the salaries that they pay, and they don't do the basics, which is, this is clearly in there. And he talked about, you know, he actually got very, very emotional. Chris Sutton's not somebody that you see that happen to often. You know, as a Celtic fan, I've seen Chris up close and, you know, he's anything but, you know, somebody easily to tears, but he couldn't hold it in. And he was talking about Nobby Styles. He was talking about Bobby Charlton, Jeff Astle, his own dad, Dave Watson, the forgotten captain of England. And he got very, very tearful. And the point was, he was then saying, this is what we need to do about it, because none of that is deniable anymore, that I think there is clear correlation. So what do you do about it? You know, and he was saying things like restricting heading, not just for kids, which is what we've heard before, but also in training sessions, time limited to the amount of heading practices, all kind of things like that. Now, given that we've talked about this once before, I think we all love our great headers and, you know, Pele 1970 and so many great headers. Where do you stand on dealing with this? Because this is now no longer going to go away, Grant. How should proper football people like you think about where heading's role is in the game?
Well, yeah, Roger, obviously, I mean, I've thought about this as well. I mean, when I go back to being a schoolboy playing football, if you were playing football in the wet, I mean, it was a terrifying prospect to head the ball, right? I mean, it was like
it
a medicine ball. It weighed a ton, right? It absolutely weighed a ton. And you'd kind of, you'd jump and you'd stick your forehead on it, but you'd have your teeth gritted every time you did it. And I was a striker, so I mean, I think it's much worse for defenders who are constantly having to try and head the ball away. But I'm interested to, and I haven't seen any studies, but I would be interested to see what a difference the new balls make. They are so much lighter.
Yeah, but they say it's the velocity, not the weight.
Yeah, I'm saying I don't know. I haven't seen the studies. I'd be interested to see what difference it makes. But I think we have to. We have to accept, Rog, in this day and age, that at some point they're going to be coming for heading. They are going to be coming for it and trying to take it out of the game. There will be studies done. And if there aren't studies done, there will be studies done that warn the dangers. And at some point there'll be a campaign. At some point the government will step in. And I suspect... Yeah, it's not guaranteed that's going to happen, but I think we definitely have to prepare for it to happen.
Hmm. Yeah, I can sense my own view changing a little bit. I've always, I guess, maybe stuck my head in the sand, I don't know, by going down the heavier ball route, by going down, you know, it's a different game now. But, you know, that really quite affected me, that Chris Sutton thing. You know, to see such a, you know, a very macho type, you know, figure you know, get very, very emotional about it. And, you know, it's the links are too great now. And I honestly do think that we have to put our preferences aside to see lovely heading and great headed goals and say, well, you know, maybe we need to move on. I don't know, but I sense that was a watershed grant.
Oh, well, maybe so. I say I didn't see it, so I will watch it when we're done recording this, and I'll chat with you about it. But I've thought this was coming for a while, Rog, and you know, I suspect it's something we're going to have to get ready for, and you have to imagine the game without it. It'll be interesting. I mean, it will change an awful lot of things, right? I mean, you won't need 6'5" centre backs anymore. You won't need 6'5" centre forwards anymore. That's for sure.
That's a good point.
Crouchy would struggle.
He was better with his feet than people give him credit for.
I totally agree.
Yeah. But the thing is, when you see the rest of sport tending towards what even in our generation we would call now extreme violence, you know, like UFC and some of the things like that, I can't find consistency there. You know, you see cage fighting now that is just animalesque brutality.
Well, you grew up in Glasgow. That's nothing new to you. That's just Friday night, 11 o'clock. I mean,
a quiet night. Yeah. No, but do you know what I mean? I don't know. I'm slightly confused because like everything else in life, it seems to be polarizing. Over there, you're getting more and more blood and more violence. And over in football, which is, as I've said before, the only sport that really matters in Europe, we're going after heading, which I think is probably correct. I just can't put it in the right context.
Yeah, if you think about rugby union, right? Look what the professional game did to the body shape of the average rugby union player.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I remember in the World Cup final in 2003, when England beat the Aussies, I remember Neil Back, a flanker, taking his shirt got ripped and he had to change his shirt in the middle of the World Cup final. And they pull his shirt off him, and he's like Arnold Schwarzenegger underneath it. I mean, it was absolutely ludicrous how ripped this guy was. And now you look at scrum halves and you look at fly halves and centres, and they're like the pack used to be back in the amateur days.
Yeah, Marvin Hagler.
You see the guys bulking up in rugby, but I think if the no heading rule comes in football, you're going to see it go completely the other way. You're going to see, you know, a lot smaller people playing. You're going to be much better off to be nimble and small and you know, better, because the game's going to play on the ground. That's just the way it's going to be. So it'll be very interesting to see the chain of events that banning heading is going to set off.
Well, listen, linking that a little bit to one of the things I wanted to mention this week as well, we've mentioned boxing a little bit. Our friends of the podcast The Zone, in the last month since we spoke, they've come out with a new offering, which is global now. It was no longer just as when we were speaking to Joe Markovsky, a couple of countries. It's now global, their boxing product, and it's a very low-priced one. And it's so interesting to see them have, you know, had to go through this horrible COVID thing that took the wind right out of their sails, and they're coming back. And if that wasn't enough, they get their star attraction, Cancelo, we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, walking away from them now. It's no longer just threatening the legal action. He's walked away. So it's a challenging time for DAZN. I think I still think they are people to be supported, because there is no doubt that that's the way sport is going. That's the way the model is going. You see all the redundancies at ESPN, you see all the figures. I don't know if they're going to succeed. I don't know if this boxing product is going to work for them now without their main attraction. But I really always kind of root for them, because they couldn't have got any unluckier, Grant. They just couldn't have.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And they seem to be making as good a fist as they can of the cards they've been dealt, right?
Yeah. No, they do. But we'll see. We'll see. It's. I actually think there's a risk now that the whole boxing world does go back to the £100 or $100 pay-per-view thing, And you know, one of our very, very first podcasts in season one was about how we felt it was going to be a golden age for boxing again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know. You know, we still need to think about Mike. You know, Mike can maybe save us.
You think?
I still got that flat.
We'll see.
All right. So my own goal this week is going to link what I would think are, you know, you've got a podcast that talks a lot about narratives, Grant. If I was to throw you some types of situations, tell me what you think the narrative around them is. A Scottish leader of the Tory party, a referee, FIFA. What are the brand values that you think links all of these?
What do you mean?
Well, if I said to you a Tory party MP in Scotland,
right,
a referee,
yep,
and FIFA, I think all of those we would consider to be not great narratives, brand values. So
I would agree with that.
One of my own goals this week is that, you won't know this, but the Conservative Party in Scotland has got a new leader. He's called Douglas Ross.
Wait, there's a Conservative Party in Scotland?
That's my point, right? Okay, so you're the new leader of the Conservative Party in Scotland, and you're called Douglas Ross, and you are also a part-time referee.
Oh, boy.
Not only that, you're a good referee, so you are a FIFA referee. So he announces himself as the new Tory party leader. He's the leader of the Tory party, and they put a big PR campaign out, and he covered it in brand association with FIFA and refereeing. So much so that FIFA didn't like it. They said that they have to stay above politics and religion, and he had to remove all of this immediately. So we've got the Tory leader in Scotland who last year, was forced to apologise because he didn't turn up for a VJ celebration because he was running the line at a match between Kilmarnock and St Johnstone.
Well, you know what I think about this, Rog? I'll tell you what I think about this. I think in an age of where politics has become so divisive, you know, pitting people against other people and left against right and old against young, and you know, everywhere you go there is just complete turmoil. Thank God we finally got a politician who can unite people, because this guy, at least everybody has got a reason to hate him.
Truly unbelievable. Although it doesn't beat some of the other things I saw this week. You know, I like to look for the ridiculous in sport. You know, and you don't have to look that far these days, Grant. It's literally everywhere. You know, I started looking at I saw an article about the EPL, you know, the cricket league.
Yeah.
And how they have...
Oh, the IPL.
Sorry, the IPL. It's EPL is how you say it in Italian. The IPL have always had an issue with Pakistani players. They don't allow them to play. And there was this really nice article in The Guardian about what the ECB should do about it and their tour of Pakistan, and they should make a bigger stand. And I thought, you know, that's right. You know, I hadn't focused on this whole Pakistan-India thing in cricket. And you know, then you see, you know, politics all over the place. You see the, you know, Saudi Arabia now talking about a sports media company that's going to sweep up all these rights and, you know, sport washing, it's called, and all this horrible stuff about human trafficking and fake agents and all of that. And you think, you know, that's one of the reasons you get down when you start reading one of these articles one after the other. And then I saw one that in its absurdity just made me laugh. It was so bad. It's so bad, Grant. So have you ever heard of a club called Carabag?
Carrier bag?
Well, no, it's called Carabag.
I have not heard of a club called Karabag, Rog, no.
Right, Karabag, they are an Azerbaijan club, and they have been in the Champions League. They've put Celtic out a couple of times, or we've played them in qualifying rounds and things
well,
like that.
Well, I mean, so obviously they're an Azerbaijani powerhouse, then, Rog, if they put Celtic out.
Yeah, powerhouse.
Yeah.
Now, so this is the article that caught my attention. UEFA has moved swiftly to provisionally ban Qarabag's communications officer. This is where the absurdity starts. The communications officer, Nurian Ibrahimov, after comments made on social media calling for the killing of all Armenians.
Okay.
Abriyamov, or whatever
he's
called.
Seems a bit drastic. Okay.
Well, no, I mean, the specifics. Posted on social media, we, the Azerbaijanis, must kill all Armenians, children, women, and the elderly. We need to kill them all without making any distinction. What? No regrets, no compassion. These are quotes, right?
What the?
This is the communications officer of a Champions League football team. So obviously UEFA has to get involved.
Holy cow.
No, it's just like, honestly, you just look for the absurdity around and it's there everywhere. So, and this is beautifully put in only the way that UEFA can. The word to look out for is provisionally.
Yeah, right.
we have this morning decided to provisionally ban from exercising any football-related activity with immediate effect until the UEFA Controls Ethics and Disciplinary Body decides on the merits of the case. I mean, fuck do you need to decide on?
Seriously?
Yeah, that was the press release UEFA put out. They have to debate it. This guy's saying kill women and children, no mercy.
I mean, Christ almighty, I swear to God. What? Wouldn't it be nice if someone just took a stand and said, right, this guy can never be in football again and let him sue us? Yeah, we'll take our chances, right? We'll take our chances that he's going to sue us. I'd run that gauntlet, wouldn't you?
Well, you should do that. I mean, like that, you should do that. But anyway, but so that's the absurdity that's around these days, Grant. And sometimes you really need to think if the world is going totally, totally crazy.
Oh, that's unbelievable, Rog. Good grief. I hadn't seen that. Oh,
of course, there is
these people are out there.
They are out there, and there is an antidote. And again, you know, this is getting towards maybe trying to bring us up the other end of this episode in a higher note, higher being the appropriate word. Now that we have got Biden in the White House, of course, the chances of marijuana sponsorships in sport has gone through the roof. Kamala Harris has always been delegitimizing the issue, and it's now predicted that so many sports rights holders all over the world will now be able to access the sponsorship dollars of weed.
Well, that'll be interesting, Rog. Particularly the number of times they refer to the whoever's leading the title race as high flying Leicester or high flying Liverpool. That'll be. This is going to be the sponsorship that launches 1,000 puns. We're going to have to stay away from that. It'll just be too easy.
But have you ever like watched sport totally stoned? Have you ever done that?
I have not.
I once had a conversation. It did go like this. I'm not making this up. It did go like this. I had a friend in the 90s who was an absolute stoner. I think he fried his brain actually. And
did he hit a lot of footballs?
No. He said to me once, he said, look, you know, everything's fine, you know, like, because we were all worried that he was like taking too much. Everything's fine. And in fact, you know, I feel everything is a lot easier in life, and like all the little problems you have, even about, you know, driving the car, it's all fine. He says, I've never driven the car smoother in my life. And we're looking at him, he's got this fucking lump in his head. He's just breaking, slamming into the windscreen.
I swear to God,
Grant, that, and like, one time he lived in Bolzano, which is in the Austrian part of Italy and right in the mountains. And we were driving up for a New Year's Eve party, and he was driving, and it was his wife and my wife, and we were in the car, the four of us. And in Milan it was fine, but as we got higher up, it started getting very very snowy, the roads, very, very snowy, the roads. And he thought this was fun because he was able to drift a little bit as we're going around the corners. Just imagine the scene, and he liked jazz on the radio, and he had Charlie Parker on, something like that. And like, so he's drifting around these mountain roads, in the snow, and you know, and like we get, it was a 2 hour drive, and we get just about there to the house, and believe it or not, he lost it on the last corner. Lost it on the last corner, oversteer, smashed into the lamppost. And since we were with walking distance, just abandoned the car. He said, "We've arrived."
We're here.
Just abandoned the
car. I love it. I love it. Well, listen, Roger, I'm going to keep you a bit longer. I've got a couple more if you've got time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
First one is a goal, and that's... I want to talk about a podcast. The podcast industry is going through such a boom. There are some extraordinarily good work being done out there in the podcast world.
Yeah.
And I came across a podcast called Stealing Victory last week. Now, there's no reason why you would have come across this, because that's the downside of podcasts, is that there's so many, it's tough to come across. You just get lost, but yeah. Occasionally you happen upon one. Now, this podcast is called Stealing Victory. Make a note of it. Subscribe to it. It's quote unquote the untold story of the 1966 World Cup heist, and it's done. It's
World
done
Cup
very
heist.
Very well. Yeah, when the trophy got stolen, the Jules Rimet trophy got stolen in 1966.
Yes. And I thought that was Bobby Moore 4 years later.
Found by Pickles thing. The dog. He was framed by a Scotsman. Pickles the dog found it under a bush. You remember? And Pickles became a national hero and what have you. Anyway,
I don't have a lot of memory of 1966
okay.
World Cup.
No. But I guess you probably went out of your way not to read anything about England winning the World Cup. So, of course, I know every detail about it, even though I wasn't born when they won it. But a guy called Tom Pettifor, who's the crime editor at the Daily Mirror, was doing some stuff, and he got a throwaway comment by one of his underworld sources a couple of years ago, led him down this track of perhaps finding out what really happened when the World Cup got stolen. And I think we're 5 episodes in. I don't know how many episodes there are, but it's really well done. It's a good story. The sound design's great. The characters they've got doing the interviews are great. You know, it takes you back to 1960s and, you know, bent coppers and, you know, East End gangsters. And it's a fabulous, fabulous story so far. And I was walking the dog, listening to the latest one about, it's called The Deal. And there's the son or the grandson of one of the lawyers who was involved in the case, representing one of the guys who was a petty villain in the East End. And just to hear him talk about, my dad, who came from Bermondsey, he was surrounded by criminals, but he was straight as an arrow, this guy. He was a solicitor and he was straight as an arrow. I'm like, okay, fine. But just listening to this story and all the characters in it, it's a wonderful, wonderful piece of storytelling. Stealing Victory. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I don't know how it ends. So if the ending's a damp squib, don't shoot the messenger. But I'm 5 episodes in and I've loved every single one of them.
Now that sounds great.
Well, listen, before we go, I didn't really say this for last. It's just come out this way. But we have to talk about handball. We have to talk about this because it's just getting a bit ridiculous now. And VAR and all this stuff now, they're going to have to do something because, you know, the weekend we saw some crazy decisions for handball. I mean, really, a couple of penalties.
And
offsides, right? The Patrick Bamford one, which I know you'll be pissed at. They need to do, and what I realised looking at that this weekend is that the referees... just as soon as they get told to go and look at the monitor, that's it, right? They don't have the balls at that point to overrule these people. They just don't have the guts to say, you know what? No, I'm not gonna do it, because, you know, we Fulham were advantaged by a penalty that was, it was a very soft penalty. I think that was probably the most giveable one of the weekend, in fairness. But you know, the Joe Gomez handball was ridiculous, right? I mean, he's just trying to get out the way of the ball. The one in the earlier game, oh God, I've forgotten who it was now. Who was the earlier game handball, Rog?
Liverpool, Man City.
Yeah, it hit him from like, you know, two. No, that was the Gomez one. He was trying Everton. To get out of the way. My mind's gone completely blank. But there was another penalty given where, you know, the ball was being fired into the box. And the guy, you know, his arm was virtually by his side. It hit him on the elbow, and penalty given, and the offside, all this stuff. VAR, when I looked at VAR in the World Cup, I was hugely excited about having it in there, because I figured it's going to stop all the pushing at penalties in corners, rather. It's going to stop all the, you know, stuff going in the box. People are going to start getting yellow cards. I've not seen one of those. I've not seen one person get pulled up and penalty given for, you know, stuff that's gone on away from the referee's eye. But all we get now are these ludicrous offside dishes in like Bamford's, which was, I mean, it was, it's crazy. You know, where his feet were, he was totally onside. Yeah, he's pointing.
Totally onside.
Give me, I mean, it's just, surely they have to look at this and go, we are making a complete mockery of our beautiful game.
Well, we said this with Al Guido on What's a Catch?
We did.
You know, it's been a theme for a long time. And you know, when Italy introduced it a year before, maybe 2 years before England, I saw all of this. And I said to people who were excited about VAR, I said, you don't know what you're wishing for. And, you know, it's what you say is the fact now. The referees have delegated their role. That's tragic. You know, I think none of us like referees, but a lot of us have respected, you know, the best ones, for right or for wrong, because they've got a personality, they've got a gravitas. Now they don't. They don't have any gravitas now. They're just paint by numbers. And it needs to change. It absolutely needs to change.
And also, I mean, you know, yes, referees would give some shocking decisions, right? But if you're a fan, you'd rage against them. By next week, you've forgotten.
Swings
it, right?
And roundabouts.
I wish they'd use VAR to stop the stuff going on off the ball, and you know, and stop people diving and faking contact and that sort of stuff. That would be great. But you know, stuff like the arbitrary handball, the borderline offside. Just, I mean, stop it. I mean, it's killing the game.
Yeah. No, I can't disagree with you, Grant. That's why we brought it up with Al Guido. It's the same thing. It's just a whole world of form over substance, and that's one of our pet peeves. I know it gets to you as well. But they are destroying the game. They absolutely are.
They really are. Well, you tried to end it on a high note, and I've dragged it down to VAR. So yeah,
well, let's end it on a high note. Did you listen to Michael Vaughan on the captain's table?
Of course I did. Yeah, absolutely. What a top bloke. What a top bloke. It really, really was. You know, just one of us, right? Just a fan, which is great. Yeah. And to, you know, to hear the England cricket captain just wanting to talk about football all day was great.
Kyle Minogue.
Yeah, right.
Or the birds that Errol Hanley was hanging about with.
No, but it was great, right? It was Georgie Best. It was the FA Cup final. It was, you know, and okay, fine. That takes me back to many memories of my own. But it's great. He was just a sports fan and you know, the sort of bloke you just love to have a beer with.
The bit I really liked was the bit about when he said, look, you know, your team needs to have a lot of, you know, consistent journeyman, good 7 out of 10 performers who will always bring that, but that's not enough. You need to have the 10 out of 10 guy that's not going to be there every day, but when he is, he makes the difference.
Yeah.
You know, for a captain of an England cricket team to, you know, to be as clear as that, I thought that was great. So hats off to Giles and... hats off to the sponsor, Loch Lomond Whiskies.
No, absolutely. So if you haven't listened to that, you'll find it in our feed. The Captain's Table with Michael Vaughan as Captain Morgan's guest. Well, Roger, I guess that brings us to the end of another goal on goal. I'm going to get myself ready for Masters Week. I don't know what that entails, but I won't be playing golf because we've got the tail end of a hurricane here. So I won't be...
Oh, really?
No, it's, the weather's here has been awful. And we've got high winds and rain and God knows what going on. So... It'll be a low-key day, but I'm looking forward to the Masters, and we shall reconvene, I'm sure, with plenty to talk about, as there always is at the end of Masters Week. Thanks to you, the audience, for listening. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for supporting the podcast. Please do take a moment to rate and review us and share the podcast with your friends. It really helps us grow the audience. Please do follow us if you don't already. On Twitter, you'll find us at EntertainedR, that's the word A-R-E. And you'll find me on Twitter at TTMYGH.
And you'll find myself at RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake. Farewell, my friend.
Farewell.
We'll do this again.
Take care. Thanks, Grant.
See you, mate.